As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Matt Goldman.
And I'm Joelle Goldman. This is our 200th episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast, if you can believe it or not. And we have something a little special and different in store for you today. So we hope you enjoy.
All right. So today we have kind of a special episode where we wanted to kind of flip the tables and tell you guys a bit about what happens behind the scenes, or what's happened behind the scenes here at Rocket Ship. We just completed our 200th episode with Jason Fried, and we felt like it was kind of a celebratory moment to take a step back. And Rob Walling, who is the host of Startups to the Rest of Us and Zen Founder, has been kind enough to come on and kind of be the host and interview us for the day. So Rob, welcome.
Absolutely. My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on. As a longtime listener and fan, it's really cool to kind of be on the other side of the mic on this show.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'm going to hand it off to you and let you take it from here.
Absolutely. Well, first off, guys, I want to say hearty congratulations for making it this far. I think the average podcast makes it 7 episodes was an early number I heard. So I think
wow,
you just about beat that. Yeah.
Thanks.
Really impressive, you know, to deliver this many episodes of the quality that you've done over the past few years. And I think, that begs the question of, like, you know, looking back over the time that you spent and the folks that you've interviewed and all the interactions with your audience, did you ever think that you would take it as far as you have. And maybe, you know, since there's three of you on the line, I might call out names as we go. But Michael, did you want to maybe kick us off with that? What, did you ever think that you guys would take it this far?
No. I mean, I think that's the short answer. We started this, we were going to write a book, How to Launch a Rocket Ship. And as we started doing these interviews and recording them, we realized there was so much value that it was almost kind of selfish for us to keep it to ourselves and just pick out little parts. So we figured, well, let's do a podcast and, you know, release these interviews. And slowly the podcast kind of took over our motivation to writing the book. And we decided, well, let's just keep doing this for as long as we feel like. Yeah, I mean, Matt, Joelle, kind of what was your take on some of that?
Yeah, I think our original plan was probably about 8 episodes to include in the book. So we started off with a schedule of 2 a week, and it never really went away, which is why after 2 years, we're right about at 200 episodes. So we didn't start with this plan, but the schedule that we committed to up front put us on a path to end up here.
And you did release a book about a year ago. Was that anywhere close to the initial concept that you came up with, or did that change dramatically once you got, you know, 100 episodes in?
It was nothing like what we originally were going to do. Our original idea for a book was going to be more teaching style. It was going to be, you know, how to do X, and here's all the steps you can follow and things we've learned from other people. And in going through the process of the podcast, one of the things we've done with each and every episode is pull out the most meaningful, impactful quotes from each person that we talk to, and they really speak for themselves. And so the book that we ended up putting out wasn't our words at all. It was everybody else's words and advice and insights that we decided to compile and share with everybody. So it was really kind of the complete opposite of what we set out to do.
So show of hands, now that you've released a podcast, you also have t-shirts and the book that came out, what do you think? Are podcasts more fun or writing the book and getting that out?
I think podcasts are definitely a lot more fun to do. Writing like a book and printing it is terrifying. And once you put it out there, that's kind of it. I've never really felt that way about a particular episode, kind of nervous to release it, or I don't know. It's just a much different format. It's a much more, I think, forgiving format. People listen, and then they go on with their day.
And you also have that. You have another one coming out later that week or next week. So even if you do screw up, it's not as permanent as a book, right?
Right. Right. Yeah.
I will say though that what putting the book together did was force us to acknowledge everything that we had done and learned, because it's so easy, especially with the schedule of 2 a week, to just go heads down and start pumping out these interviews, and a lot of the stuff that you learn swirls around in your head, and it's hard to kind of step back and really appreciate what you've learned. So it was a good exercise in taking a pause, compiling all the best parts of what we've learned, and kind of celebrating together.
Yeah, and I mean, touching on that, you know, you guys have obviously learned a ton through the guests that you've had on, and I'm sure there's been some moments that have maybe been surprising, you know, surprised by the answer a guest gave or surprised by something that came out of it. So maybe Matt, you can kick us off. What has been the most surprising thing that you've encountered?
I think it was everything as a whole. I was expecting to discover the right way to do certain things as we interviewed people, like the right way to do funding, for example. And what we found was that everyone does it in their own way. And that's really what's great about business, is that there is no one way to do it. And talking to 200 different people really shows you the unique ways and teaches you that you have to be open to learning some things from a bunch of different people and then decide your own path with every aspect, everything you do. Funding is one example of that.
Yeah, and I think one of the most, like, I guess, exciting as a host is when we catch someone kind of in a unique space. And one of the early interviews we did with Adi, who was kind of in between before Receiptful. He was trying to figure out what his next step was. And he was also trying to figure out what being an entrepreneur meant to him. And in that episode, it was the first time I felt like we captured something really special. Captured kind of the emotional and the human side of being, you know, an entrepreneur and working in startups, which for me was kind of the inspiration to keep going and creating more of these when we were able to grab something that I couldn't read in TechCrunch and put it out there for people.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one, Michael. And I think that really what has surprised me in looking back is we started with a very tactical perspective. How do you do this? What's a better way to go about sales or writing email or raising a round? Like, everything was very tactical. And I think in the conversations we've had as a group and individually, the things that have been most impactful have been about life and things that we've learned about, you know, balance and entrepreneurship and going through the ups and the downs. And there's been lessons that have really changed my life and my perspective on what we're doing as a whole, and they have nothing to do with tactics.
Yeah, I think that's so fascinating because, I mean, you kind of, all three of you touched on that same point, that it's not just about reading the books and getting the points. There's no one right way to do it. And I think the further that we get into this journey, we all realize that there, while tactics are helpful and you're going to need them throughout your career, they become much less important the more you learn. And when you're a beginner, you need to just hear about the tactics and figure it out. But when you're intermediate or become more advanced, it's like, that's not the most important part anymore. So I think that is a surprising thing, and I'm glad that that's kind of, you know, what you raised here. So how about in terms of guests? I mean, you guys interviewed hundreds of guests. You know, what was your favorite lesson that you learned from a guest? Maybe Michael can kick us off on that one.
My favorite story that we ever got, and I don't know if it, I think it wasn't really a lesson, but before we talked to the Boomerang founder, and before the interview, we're like, do you have any kind of exciting stories? He's like, no, I don't know. You know, our journey's been kind of the same as everyone else's. And we started talking, and about 15 minutes in, we started hearing about how he got funding. And it turns out that, like, his girlfriend saw that Dave McClure was at a mechanic on Twitter and needed a ride to the airport, and arranged him to pick up Dave McClure and drive him to the airport. And so we had 15 minutes to pitch him. I mean, this is the kind of stuff out of a movie. And it was one of, like, just the best kind of serendipitous stories of a founder who then, you know, he got into 500, because of that. And it was something that was completely unpredictable and something that he could prepare for, but couldn't actually ever replicate happening, ever again.
Yeah, we interviewed Gabriel Weinberg of DuckDuckGo at one point, and this is someone who's building a search engine, and for probably over 10 years now, he's been going against the giants in the industry like Google. And he told us about how important it is to try different traction channels, even if you don't think that they'll be successful. Things like radio or billboards, things that you think of as archaic that aren't present in your industry. And you can apply your own creative spin to it. And what they did was, right near Google's office, they took out a billboard, basically taking a stance and a jab at Google on privacy. And it set them apart. It was right in Google's face. And it was something that no one else would think to do, because they were open to trying new traction channels.
I think looking back, for me, there's two pieces of advice that I've found to be really important in my life. And one came at the very beginning of the podcast, and one came in our very last episode. And to me, they kind of go hand in hand. The first was when we spoke with Garrett Diamond, and he shared his whole experience about how you can't put your life on hold for anything that's going on in your business. Because if you're constantly waiting for the money to be right or the timing to be right or all these other things that are going on, you're going to wait forever because nothing's ever going to feel quite right or like you're quite ready. And just a week ago, we were talking with Jason Fried from Basecamp. And the way he put it is that the habits you set early on are the ones that are going to carry over in the long term. And I really took that to heart because to me, it's kind of the same thing. We get in these habits of working really long hours or focusing on all the things on the to-do list. And we just think that like, it's going to get better. You know, we're in the early stages, but it's once we get through this, it's going to get better. And so both things have really changed the way, actually both Matt and I approach our work and our lives and the way we prioritize what's important and what's doing and what's not.
Yeah, sounds like you guys have had a lot of takeaways. I'm sure there, and those are your favorite moments. I know there are probably dozens of others that have shaped the way that you guys are approaching your own startups. From my perspective, having listened to, I think, pretty much every episode you guys have released, I have two favorite episodes. Episode 23 with Heaton Shaw, and he talks about the pros and cons of funding. And then episode 27 with Jason Cohen just blew my mind. You guys dug into some topics that I hadn't heard him talk about before. And they were, you know, these are early episodes, but they were, that was the point where I heard them and I thought, this show has legs. Like, you guys were talking about things that other startup interview shows were not. And that's actually when I started recommending it to people, talking about it on my own shows, tweeting it and kind of spreading the word, because you guys really, you know, I don't know if you upped your game with those episodes or if that's just when it occurred to, you know, when it occurred to me that you were really hitting on something that other people weren't.
Thanks. Yeah.
That's funny you picked those, because those specifically are two episodes that I think as soon as they were over, we were like, damn, we could have asked so many other questions, or we could have done this better, or I feel stupid after asking that. And
the
like, there was almost like,
yeah,
there was like a sense of like shame almost after those. So that's funny that those are the exact two you picked as your favorites.
I think part of it was just looking up to Heaton, and then after the episode, I don't know, we all collectively just felt like we had failed. I don't know why, but we all just kind of felt like, oh man, that wasn't that good. Like we should have made that way better.
This was not planned at all. I had no idea. But the thing is, you get those two guys, you know, Heaton and Jason Cohen, and there are others, but them specifically, like, you could ask them 100 questions and talk for 5 hours, and they would still be saying interesting, novel, unique things because they've thought so much about this and they have so much experience of being funded, being not funded, you know, building big teams, building small teams. I mean, there's so much to talk about. So, yeah, I think, like I said, those ones had an impact on me for sure.
That's well, I think cool that too. Jason specifically was towards the beginning of us realizing that there wasn't one way to go about raising money, for example. And I think that really shows in that episode. I felt like a punching bag, like with every single question I asked, because I was asking these questions as if there was a way to do it. And he was coming back, showing me A, that there wasn't one way, and B, that they had a very unique approach to it that was very different from my mental model of fundraising at the time. So very hard episode to get through, but also one which taught us more than any other episode.
Yeah, you took it on the chin on that one, Matt.
You know, Jason Cohen, he's so far ahead of us on so many fronts. I think he makes all of us feel like punching bags now and again. Yeah. Because he asks the hard questions, you know, and he says what he's really thinking, and it's more helpful than I think sugarcoating it.
Yeah, it's refreshing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you guys, 200 episodes in, you have a myriad of other things going on, Churnbuster, and, you know, all the book you've put out, the t-shirts. I mean, just, you have a lot of things going on. Why have you continued to dedicate time and energy to the podcast? What has really kept you going and investing time?
Michael, go ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is we set an intention and a commitment to do it twice a week. And I think we've just missed a couple holidays. But other than that, we have stuck to it. And I think the other part is just the value that we get out of it, being able to talk to people that we look up to that are a couple steps ahead of us, and being able to learn from them is one of the best opportunities that I could ask for. And because we've done it for so long, it gets easier and easier to ask people to come on and share with us. And that's just been a huge value. And you can actually see with the show, if you ever, you know, listened in order, that as our interests change, our guests change, and the questions that we ask change. You know, we start off very tactical, and then we get into funding because we were very curious about it. And then we go into more sales and growth stuff. And I think the podcast has just kind of evolved as we have.
Yeah. From a selfish perspective, it's been like a self-curated, I don't even want to say an MBA program, but the education that we've created for ourselves by doing this over the past 2 years is still mind-blowing to me. I mean, I think about where we were mentally before we started doing this and where we are now, and the amount of awesome advice, great information that we've been able to take in really for free. I mean, just setting up the calls and getting on the phone with people, it's been an incredible learning experience. From a little less selfish perspective, we consume so much information. We're constantly reading and listening to other podcasts. And to me, it's a way to give back a little bit and share things that we're learning and things that we find interesting with others like us. And at times when I feel like, you know, maybe we're doing a little too much or it's pulling us away from other things, we tend to get an email here or there from someone just saying, thanks for this particular episode, or keep it up, or, you know, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. And that's really, really meaningful because it's a reminder that people are listening and that we're not the only ones learning from this. We're not the only ones consuming all this great advice, that there's a lot of people out there that are benefiting from it as well. And so for me, that's really fulfilling.
Yeah, there can't be enough said about committing to two a week, because for me personally, the first episode we recorded was extremely stressful and scary because I was really introverted at that point. And by committing to two a week, it's put me on this path to break free of that in some ways, whether it's getting on the phone every week with a stranger, scheduling calls with people that you think, you know, would never respond to your emails, or you know, a few months ago, we went to a conference that we were invited to as media, and they needed some help. So we got up on stage and announced guests for the day. And that was the most terrifying thing. And if I wasn't forced to do it, I probably wouldn't have. But going through it and totally tanking and hating it, like, it opened me up to doing it more and showed me that even though it did kind of suck, it wasn't that bad. And being forced to do things like this and being forced to branch out are really, really powerful and help you grow so much faster.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've long believed that, and this commonly held belief with a lot of folks who are doing things in public, it's that you get a portion of the value that you put into the world, you get a portion of that back. It's a very small portion. So if you help 100,000 people, you might get, you know, some people that are helping you. It's not everyone. But the amount of value that you are able to put into the world through something like Rocket Ship, or through a company that you start, or through a book that you write, or through hosting a conference, whatever it is, doing things in public not only gets you over that terror, like you were just saying, Matt, and it makes you better at being a public speaker or being on other podcasts or getting up on stage. So it improves you, but it also comes back around in some way. There is this feedback loop, and I've found that the more that I've helped people, the more people are willing to help me. And it sounds like that's probably a similar thing has happened with you, that the more you're able to teach yourself while teaching others, it is just this virtuous cycle that you've been able to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
So cool. I'm curious what you guys are most excited about in 2016. When we're recording this, it's January of 2016, and there's a lot to look forward to. I know we all have a lot going on. So maybe, Michael, if you could kick us off on that one.
Yeah. Well, we actually have some really exciting news. Kind of like, I described how the podcast has evolved with our interests and who we are today. I mean, we've been doing this now 2 years, and you know, we've all changed as people. And so what we're doing for 2016 is trying to reimagine the show as what we want it to be today. And we want to take a more editorial kind of direction and still stick with teaching, because we're really excited to still be able to bring these lessons, but we want to do it even better. And so we're going to take a brief hiatus, and we're going to try to reimagine what Rocket Ship looks like today. There'll still be interviews. There'll still be startup topics. There'll still be learning, but the format of the show may be a little bit different when we come back.
Matt and Joelle, anything to add to that?
No, I think Michael set it up kind of perfectly. We change a lot over the course of a couple years, and I think it's almost easier to keep doing what you're doing, especially when you feel like you've got a groove, and doing two interviews a week has been our routine, and we do enjoy what we're doing. And so to challenge ourselves and to do a better job of what our goal is with this whole thing, teaching ourselves and teaching others, we just kind of step back, and I'll credit Michael to really pushing us to do that and think differently about how we're approaching this whole thing. So I'm really excited to kind of take this in a new direction and challenge myself in a new way.
So to be clear to the listeners, the show is going to continue. There's going to be a very short-term hiatus. Yes. while you guys retool. But in your podcatcher, keep this subscription active, and you know, in a little bit, we'll start seeing some newly formatted shows coming out.
Yep.
Sounds good. Well, this is the last question that I have, and I really want to give you guys permission to kind of talk about what you're doing in 2016, your own startups, your own projects, because that's something that, as I've listened to the show, I didn't even know what Michael was up to. I had to go look it up online. I found him on Twitter, and then I clicked through and read his Medium bio, and you know, it's that kind of stuff. So I think that listeners probably want to hear more about, and feel free to brag or to plug, or you know, to talk about whatever you're excited about that you are working on in 2016.
Yeah, and, well, you know, yeah, we've always tried to kind of keep ourselves out of the show, and not out, like, just our personal, I guess, endeavors. So to keep the focus on the guest and even for us to keep the focus on getting value out of the guest and not always worried about how we sound and do people know what we're up to. And that was always very intentional for us. And so that's probably why people don't really know. But what I've been, you know, when we started the show, I was trying to kind of build a startup, and through the show, learning about business development, growth, marketing. I now run partnerships at Crew.
No, that's cool. It's nice to start a new gig. And for folks who haven't heard of Crew, it's at crew.co, and the headline is "Work with the best designers and developers." So you guys find high-end designers and developers, and then you pair them up with folks who need a website or a mobile app or print design or that kind of stuff. Is that
it's
fairly
really
accurate?
Yeah, taking kind of the background of being a freelancer and an agency and trying to solve some of the problems that those people have. And when I, you know, I started off as a solo freelancer, I built a small agency, and you know, you always have to be filling out RFPs, doing budgeting, and finding the next project. And so that's really where my interest in Crew was I could take a lot of those experiences and try to help, people in a similar situation make their lives easier.
Sounds cool. Joelle, how about you? What are you stoked about in 2016?
Well, for those of you who don't know, Matt and I, and our partner Ken have a new endeavor that we've kind of embarked on, which is Churnbuster. Many of you have probably heard of it. It's been around for a while, and we acquired it from Andrew Culver a few months ago. And the entire idea around doing that came from the podcast. I had always kind of been in this mental model that, like, if you're doing a startup, you come up with an idea and you build it and you find product market fit, and you kind of have to go through all these layers and stages. And going through the podcast and talking with JD Graffam, whose business model is basically acquiring products that are at a certain stage and growing them, was like a huge light bulb. And I'll give Matt credit for really kind of pushing that exploration, which led to us acquiring EarnBuster in the first place. And so we're in a really interesting position now that we've never been in, where we've always been kind of fighting and clawing and trying to find product market fit. And now we've got something that has fit and solves a huge problem and does it really well. And we get to now embark on like all these other skills that we've been learning and hearing about on sales and marketing and growth and partnerships, all these things that we've never really gotten to sink our teeth into. Now we really get to do it. And I'm so, so, so excited for that in 2016.
Yeah, you guys did a good job of leapfrogging all that painful agony of the pre-product market fit customer development. And at least on this one, you're able to jump out to post-product market fit to be able to use all the growth stuff that you've learned, like you said. And that's, so if someone's interested in checking that out, it's at churnbuster.io. And your headline is "Stop Paying Customers to Failed Payments." And you have integrations with Stripe, Chargeify, MoonClerk, and it looks like you have a custom API as well. And so that's the idea, right? It's mainly for SaaS apps and membership sites, I'd imagine, and they can plug in and you help them keep folks from having their payments expire.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, from running Drip, a pretty large percentage of payments fail for a number of reasons. And if you're not set up in the right way to keep those customers, you can lose customers who, you know, shouldn't have churned out. And we've seen up to half of companies churn being due to this problem. And a lot of it is fixable with some simple tactics. So yeah, it's a big problem, and it's cool to jump in at the point where you have a product that solves it pretty well. And we have a lot of ideas for 2016. So it's going to be fun. We spent the first few months, we acquired it in, I think the end of October, and we've been working to make sure current customers are taken care of, fix any bugs, performance issues, really getting acquainted with something that has been around for years that we had no experience with. And going forward now, we're at a point where we can start to inject some of our own ideas and the things we've learned and start to solve problems. And one of the coolest things about it is that because we're recovering money for customers, we can actually tie a value to the features that we develop and the services that we offer. So we can build something or offer a new service where we hunt for a certain kind of revenue. And within a week or two, we're going to know whether it's working or not, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is neat. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm one of the seed investors that put money in for you guys to acquire and grow ChurnBuster.
Yeah, and thank you. And that also came from the podcast, you know?
Yeah.
So it's great. It's really involved in all aspects of what we're doing now and what we've done in the past.
Yeah, for sure. Well, guys, I feel like we should maybe wrap this up. Or anything else that we missed that, you know, you are excited about for 2016?
Well, I would just like to thank everyone for listening, yeah, supporting, subscribing. For like the last 2 years, and you know, the response has always been amazing and humbling, and for everyone that's listened, just thank you.
Yeah, ditto from this side. Thank you so much to everybody that supported us. It does not go unnoticed, and it means so much. And thank you to all of the guests that have come on the show and taken time out of their busy days, including you, Rob, and giving back to our community of rocket shippers with their advice and their stories as well.
Yeah, and thank you for volunteering to do this. It was something that we hadn't really thought about yet. We didn't have a plan for episode 200. We didn't have a plan to pause and appreciate what's happened the past couple of years. And you're the one that not only suggested that, but also offered your time to guide us through it. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on behalf of the myriad of listeners that have followed you for the past couple hundred episodes, I want to say thanks to you guys for putting these out and taking the time and investing your time in doing this rather than keeping it to yourselves like you could have done. And, you know, we'll be waiting with bated breath for the kind of the reboot of the show here after your brief hiatus.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
Here is kind of our new stab, intro and a quick preview of one of the first episodes we'll be releasing here in just a couple months.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm, the podcast where we explore startups from funding to growth, from culture to sales, and everything in between. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Matt Goldman.
And I'm Joelle Goldman.
Today on the show, we'll be talking about funding, and specifically diving into the history of funding in Silicon Valley. Now, this may not seem